Chapter 8. Meneticu Sector. Day 109 of the Midrim Retreat. 7 years later. The first attack came at midnight, 3 days after Twilight's departure from Coyurti. The Thunderstrike was floating with its escort at the edge of a lifeless system dominated by a crimson sun, racing to complete a maintenance shift as it plotted a course out of enemy territory. When an Imperial destroyer jumped out of hyperspace and moved into firing range, a pilot and his Promise and its two X-Wings responded swiftly enough to prevent any real damage to the Thunderstrike. The Rebel forces were able to escape the frenetic battle at light speed, though one of the X-Wings was crippled by a glancing turbo laser blow. The second attack came 30 hours later. This time the Thunderstrike was ambushed upon arrival in the Enrivi system, where a Howl had to hope to put in for additional repairs. The attacking force consisted of a light cruiser and a squadron of TIE fighters. Even with one X-Wing offline, Twilight managed to destroy the foe without difficulty. The shock wave of the cruiser's death rows, the blossoming detonation of its engines and weaponry, obliterated the ship's own escape pods. As Howl later put it, the Imperial casualties were deeply regrettable and unintended. This didn't prevent a raucous celebration from erupting afterward, in which Twilight soldiers broke out contraband drinks and toasted their pilots and gunners. The pilots and gunners didn't participate. They feared they'd be needed again, and soon. The third attack came after another 19 hours, despite two course changes made by the Thunderstrike to shake pursuers. In a swift hammer blow delivered in the Chansetta system, a group of TIE interceptors hidden in a comet trail ravaged the starboard side of the troop transport before Twilight managed to flee. By this time, even the most skeptical company members were convinced the Empire was tracking them through the endless depths of space. This was a novelty. Even ignoring the fact that tracking ships in hyperspace was virtually impossible, Twilight Company had never been considered so strategically significant as to earn the Empire's particular enmity. With the entire rebellion on the run, why would anyone go to so much effort, sacrifice resources and lives to wear down a single infantry unit? There was only one plausible explanation. As a precaution, Namir ordered extra security around Ivari Chalice's cell. He doubted anyone would make an attempt on the governor's life. As satisfying as the thought was, not even Corbo seemed so reckless. But scared people did stupid things.
I hear that three Imperial battle groups have abandoned rebel engagements to hunt us. Would you like to confirm or deny?
The droid's voice sounded like rust, a harsh, grating, electrical noise that made Namir grind his teeth. Or maybe it was M2M5's left claw that soured his mood. The jagged metal picks and assortment of mechanical tools that whirred, extended, and retracted from the thing's wrist seemed like the toy box of a torturer. Namir didn't like droids. He'd never be comfortable with technology that could think. But M2M5 was the best mechanic in Twilight Company, and Namir had been told, in so many words, to get over your qualms and trust the walking scrap heap. "Is that why we have engine problems?" Namir asked. "Because you're listening in on bridge communications when you're supposed to be working?"
"We have engine problems because my ship keeps being attacked. And my ship keeps being attacked because we have engine problems."
Namir scowled. "Meaning?" The droid trundled through the cramped engine compartment. Namir had to stay close to hear its voice over the noise of the hyperdrive.
"You recall the strike made on us shortly after you brought your Imperial friend aboard?"
"I almost burned to death, I remember. And I didn't bring Chalice aboard. Howl decided..." M2M5 was waving its claw in front of a sealed hatch. A green light on one of the droid's instruments turned red.
"You see? That indicates a hypermatter particle leak. The damage is at the microscopic level, likely localized to one of several hundred radiation refractors in the thunderstrike. It is not enough to impact efficiency, but it could leave a trail for Darth Vader to follow.
We don't know Vader has anything to do with it. Don't listen in on Chalice either. The red light flickered rapidly. Namir suspected it was the droid equivalent of a shrug. Or an obscene gesture. You think the damage occurred in that first attack? Namir asked.
It is likely. I suspect even the Imperials did not identify our trail until Coyote. Regardless, I do not have adequate equipment to render repairs.
So cannibalize yourself for parts, Namir said, and stalked toward the nearest ladder out of the compartment. Send a full report to the captain. This is going to be a problem. Howl had the senior staff assembled an hour later. Namir stood in the back of the conference room along with Chief Medic Von Geis and Quartermaster Hober. The place reserved for Twilight members invited out of courtesy, who weren't expected to contribute to the discussion. Around the table sat Lieutenant Sergon, bridge crew from the Thunderstrike and a pilot as promise, and Ivari Chalice, who had chosen to occupy the captain's seat, sipping tea from a tin cup while Howl paced around the perimeter. The first proposal to abandon Chalice came from Lieutenant Sergon, mere moments after Howl had summarized the situation.
We've been lucky so far, Sergon said. The Empire hasn't had forces positioned to do more than harry us. But they're closing in, and we can't survive against a Star Destroyer.
A Super Star Destroyer, Chalice interrupted with a bitter smile. Vader has a new flagship, but please, proceed.
Sergon didn't look at Chalice.
We send the Governor out in a shuttle, odds are she won't survive. But the imps won't keep chasing us with everything they have either. I don't like the plan, but I don't see a way to hold on to her and live.
Chalice nodded sagely, as if she'd been expecting precisely this. No, Howe said, gaze dancing between his officers, making eye contact one moment, then breaking it the next. I asked for your opinions, and I appreciate your candor, Lieutenant, but we are not abandoning this woman. Tau Reason 4. Hope Station. Unruler Dawn. He struck the tabletop with each name. All lost while we were escorting the fleet out of the mid-rim. General Amrashad is dead. Even Commander Skywalker can't blow up a Death Star every month. Our decapitation of Coyote's bioweapons program is the only real victory the Alliance has seen lately. Chalice gave us that opportunity, and she's nearly finished her report delineating the Empire's entire logistical network. Once we have that, everything changes. Then he smiled broadly, straightened his back, and spread his arms wide. More suggestions? Keep them coming. The discussions and arguments began in earnest then. Two crew members from Apylana's Promise wanted to head for Bascron pirate territory and strike a deal for materials to repair the Thunderstrike. That would be a harrowing journey at best, even assuming the pirates were keen to negotiate. Commander Peonu, Thunderstrike's naval captain, reluctantly spelled out his plan to transfer Chalice and select personnel to Apylana's Promise and split the Thunderstrike from its escort. The Empire would pursue Twilight Company, perhaps obliterating it, but Chalice and key figures could flee to safety. Even Von Geis offered his input, asking if Twilight could lie low for days or weeks in a nebula or the atmosphere of a gas giant, somewhere that might scramble Imperial sensors while the company waited for enemy search parties to disperse. Namir listened and tried to follow along. At first he racked his brain to remember what little he knew of the sector map and hyperdrive mechanics, but his knowledge was too superficial, and even the terminology eluded his grasp. His skills were on the ground, limited to guns and people who carried guns. When his attention started to wander,
He fixed his gaze on Howell, who nodded and asked his staff questions and never showed impatience. He looked utterly unworried, entirely in control. You have no idea what to do, Namir thought. Your ship, Chayla said, is compromised. Commander Peonu had the right idea. Everyone at the table watched the governor, some with interest and many with suspicion. Sargon started to interrupt, but Chalice waved him off. I propose we locate an Imperial cargo transport. I can get us within range, and your soldiers, she cocked her head as she uttered the word, looking directly at Namir, can board it. Once the vessel is under our control and all personnel transferred, you abandon this wreck and we resume our journey. Sargon shook his head. And when we enter shooting range, how do we avoid damaging the transport? If it's supposed to be our new home, we can't afford to hit something critical. That's assuming the enemy captain doesn't wipe his ship's computers or rig it to self-destruct once he realizes... Do you want me to plan the attack for you? Chalice asked, suddenly leaning forward, eyes keen. I thought you people liked a challenge. The conference degenerated from there, voices rising until a howl pounded the table with a fist. He didn't allow the discussion to pause, however. He began gesturing to officers seemingly at random, prompting them to offer opinions and counter-arguments. It was obvious there was merit to Chalice's idea, despite its crust of impracticality. Howell's roving finger pointed to Namir.
Sergeant, can it be done?
Can what be done? Namir wanted to ask. He gnawed on his lower lip, running scenarios in his mind. If you can get boarding parties over there, he said, we could probably take a small transport. Wouldn't want to hold it, though, with imps hiding in every closet and setting traps. Howell nodded carefully and began to turn away. It wasn't a solution, but it was the truth. So why, Namir wondered, was Governor Chayla staring at him expectantly as if Namir had held back something essential? We could get in and out, though. Namir was talking again before he fully realized what he was proposing. Take a section of the ship, hold open a corridor, and get an engineering team inside. He glanced at the quartermaster, then to Howell. Could we strip an Imperial engine for parts, use them to patch up the Thunderstrike? Howell's lips quirked into a smile. I don't know, but it's certainly an interesting idea. Chalice mimed a slow clap, leaning back in her seat. No one else appeared to notice, and it slowly dawned on Namir that he'd said exactly what she wanted him to. You never visit anymore, Sergeant. The strategy session was over. Half the officers lingered in the conference room to speak to Howell or one another, plotting details for the raid. Namir had expected Chalice to remain with them. Instead, she followed a step behind him down the corridor toward the mess. Maybe because every time you talk, my people end up in danger, Namir said, not looking back. Charmer got shot. Mediu was breathing smoke. On Coyurti, you're a curse on the company. Chalice made a noncommittal sound, not denying the charge before answering. A curse on the company. You really are from a primitive world, aren't you? Namir had never said a word about his background to Chalice. She kept speaking before he could interject. If it helps, she said, I really did want you to survive the distillery. It would have been bad for my defection if your team had come back covered in pustules. Now he stopped walking and turned to face her. He considered how hard he could slug her without leaving a mark. She wouldn't be the first prisoner of war he'd ever hurt, just the first that belonged to Twilight. The things the Creed would have done to you. Chalice let out an exasperated sound and shook her head. Since you so clearly loathe me, I'll get to the point. If we're really raiding an Imperial transport, you're going to need me aboard. With my authorization codes, I can get your droids into the ship's computer in half the time. So this time, I share the risk.
The reasoning made sense. Namir wondered what he was missing. The governor didn't seem the type to volunteer.
Why tell me?
He asked.
I want you to keep me alive.
Chalice's gaze was locked on Namir.
The arrogance and disdain in her voice had curdled into bitterness. I'm appointing you my security escort for when we're aboard.
That too took Namir by surprise, and he made an effort to keep his expression neutral. He wanted to tell her she didn't get to appoint anyone. He wanted to ask what she thought she'd achieve by using him. But she'd played him in the strategy session, prompted him to put forth the idea he was certain she'd had first. She'd known capturing a cargo transport was impossible, and she'd known a raid would sound better coming from someone other than her. Namir was tired of fulfilling her expectations. Instead, he kept his voice low and said, "You really shouldn't trust me."
"Everyone on your ship, Captain Yvonne excepted, wants me dead," Chayla said. "My choices are limited. My standards for trust aren't what they used to be."
The Red Hern system was a charnel house, adrift with the corpses of planets. Its sun had gone supernova centuries earlier, burning worlds to cinders. Now, no sign remained on those planets' ravaged surfaces of life or civilization. The remnant of the Red Hern star, a collapsed post-nova fragment that glowed white with seething intensity, exuded radiation deadly to any unshielded creature. But Red Hern was not empty. When the planets of the inner system had cracked open, their cores had been exposed to the star's toxic rays and been transmuted into exotic new materials, the building blocks of hypermatter fuel. Thus, in the waning days of the Republic, Red Hern had become host to parasites, scavenging drones that crawled across its planets and carried their bounty of volatile minerals and gases to orbital mining stations operated by skeleton crews. Those stations still remained to feed the Empire. They were not Twilight Company's target. Instead, the Thunderstrike and its escort lurked at the edge of the Red Hern system, nestled in the crescent of a shattered moon, where neither scanners nor visual inspection could easily detect them. They awaited the transport that Governor Chalice promised would come, a freighter that would siphon off the mining station's hoard and carry the day's take to more hospitable galactic climes. The question that hung over Twilight Company was this: which would arrive first? The Thunderstrike's prey, or its pursuers? It had been a full standard day since the last attack. Cornered as it was within the grip of the moon's gravity, the Thunderstrike was vulnerable. It would not be able to jump to hyperspace from its hiding spot, not without maneuvering into open space first. Howell had agreed to wait in ambush for 4 hours and no more. After that, the company would need to seek prey elsewhere. Namir loathed the plan, and he loathed his part in it. He'd spent the last hours working with squad leaders to devise strategies and run drills. The boarding parties were all experienced in zero-gravity combat, EVA procedures, proper use of spacesuits and oxygen masks, everything required in case things went horribly wrong. This was a day not to test the fresh meat, but to put veterans and ex-stormtroopers and former pirates to work. Namir's own squad wouldn't be present, with the exception of Charmer, who'd participated in more boarding operations than Namir had ever seen. When Namir had warned him not to get shot again, Charmer had only grinned his horrible, scar-faced grin. That left Namir alone on the Thunderstrike's bridge, sweltering under layers of armor and gear, while his fellow soldiers gathered several decks below. He would have no part in the initial insertion. Howell had approved Governor Chalice's request. Namir was playing bodyguard for the day.
So Namir waited. He watched Chalice and the captain and commander Peonu speak quietly to one another, observed the bridge crew tap at consoles and adjust levers. He'd never liked spending time on the bridge. When he was elsewhere on the ship, he didn't have to think about how it worked, about the mechanics at play and the naval officers who'd learned the difference between acceleration compensators and null quantum field generators. The officers whose expertise meant the difference between life and death in a sucking void. Namir didn't mind space travel, but he bristled at reminders of his ignorance. The mere existence of the bridge needled him. The thunderstrike had been lurking for 2 hours when alarms went off and the bridge crew scrambled to see what had arrived from hyperspace. The officers' voices were nervous and giddy when they reported what appeared to be an Imperial heavy freighter, lightly armed and ponderously slow. The captain smiled tightly but showed no other sign of pleasure. The Imperial vessel was a rugged, durasteel cylinder that stretched half a kilometer long, bristling with ejectable storage pods and maneuvering thrusters. It might have been a warship once, before decades of use had left it obsolete and 100 retrofits had stripped it of its might. "Ships," Chalice said softly, as if quoting someone else, "like men, must be used until they break." The second scanning station reported that the freighter wouldn't pass near the Thunderstrike's moon on its current course. That was unsurprising. Chalice took the bridge communications terminal and rapidly entered a series of authorization codes before opening a channel. "Imperial freighter," she said. "We have been monitoring ion storm activity in this system. For your own safety, please alter your approach vector as follows." Chalice read out numbers. Namir watched the crew. The freighter did not change course. "If they knew who we were," the captain mused, "they'd raise shields. They'd run. Instead, they're ignoring us."
"What if it's a trap?"
Namir asked. "Then I expect we're doomed anyway," Howell said. Chalice repeated her message more forcefully this time. Again, the freighter did not respond or change course.
"We need to go," Namir thought. "Or we need to take a chance and attack. But we need to do something."
He didn't speak. He wasn't on the bridge to advise the captain. Chalice slapped a palm on the communications console, her voice suddenly louder, a snarl of perfect arrogance.
"Imperial freighter, this is Governor Ivari Chalice. If you do not adjust course within 15 seconds, I will deal with you as I dealt with the crew of the Mandible during the Belnar insurrections. That will be my gift to your superior, Commodore Krovis, before I have him tried for gross incompetence."
She cut off the signal, and with it, the sneer on her face. Arrogance dropped away like a mask, and she stared at the scanners with all the tension of a soldier awaiting battle.
"It's changing course," an ensign said.
"Ready the boarding pods," Howell called,
and the bridge went into action. A pylon as promised and Thunderstrike emerged together. The latter from its hiding space in the shadow of the broken moon, the former from behind an asteroid that had once been part of a planet. Flanked by two enemies, the freighter made the obvious choice, angling away from the weapons-laden gunship toward the Thunderstrike. Its shields and weapons were fully charged by the time Thunderstrike came into range. This was not a problem. For all the damage the Thunderstrike had accrued over the previous days, it could still hold its own against a freighter. The squadron of TIE fighters that the freighter disgorged would prove more troublesome. But a pilot, as promised, could pick the starfighters off one by one if it could get a clear shot. Sickly green bolts flickered across the gap of space, splashing against the Thunderstrike's englobing shields like raindrops in iridescent oil. The rebel vessel returned fire in periodic crimson volleys, causing the freighter's own deflectors to shimmer and coruscate under stress. As the Thunderstrike maneuvered ever nearer, The freighter began to pull back, but by then it was too late, and velocity was on the side of the attackers. As if a countdown had reached zero, the Thunderstrike's boarding pods shot free toward the freighter. Each had been adapted from an escape pod, capsules originally designed to save lives by trading their maneuverability and fuel storage for hardiness and launch power. By reinforcing them further, and by equipping them with magnetic grapples and laser drills. Each pod carried a squad of Twilight Company troops, rattled and crammed together with only minutes' worth of air. As the pods rocketed toward their target, the Thunderstrike's gunners took on the task of protecting the pods from the TIE fighters. The destruction of a single pod would represent a loss of manpower and technology Twilight Company could ill afford. The loss of multiple pods would thwart any boarding attempt and force a withdrawal. But the pods struck home. Their drills sparked to life and began the process of carving open the freighter's hull. Namir reached out, grabbed Chalice's neck with a gloved hand, and tightened the rebreather mask over her face. "Just keep it on," he said. "If we get sucked into vacuum, I won't have time to help you."
"Of course,"
Chalice said, her voice muffled.
"Anything else?"
The boarding pod was shuddering, jostling Namir against the sealed door as the laser drill burned into the freighter. Chalice was barely a hand span away. Behind her, two more soldiers cradled their rifles. Namir drew a blaster pistol from his belt, holding it out to Chalice in both hands. "It's a DH-17. Leave the settings the way they are and don't even think of switching it to automatic. Point and shoot if it comes to that." Chalice turned the weapon over and smirked. "I have used a blaster before. You've seen me. You've wiped out whole ships before, too," Namir said. "Doesn't mean I want you commanding mine." "I have no idea what you're talking about." Namir placed a palm on the door, trying to judge the rocking of the pod. "I will deal with you," he quoted, "as I dealt with the crew of the Mandible." Chalice laughed and shook her head. "The Mandible was an accident. A drunk captain ferrying volatile cargo. I got credit because, well, if you were the Empire, what rumor would you rather spread? That one of your captains was grossly negligent and got his men killed in a mishap? Or that a ruthless high-ranking officer saw incompetence on her watch and executed those responsible?" The pod stopped rocking. The sound of shearing metal echoed in the chamber. "I've noticed how you handle the recruits," Chalice continued with a shrug. "Tell me you wouldn't scare them much the same, assuming you could get away with it." Namir barked a laugh and raised his rifle. "I'd do a lot of things if I could get away with them. Be grateful I can't and step away from the door." Chalice obeyed as well as she could in the cramped space. Namir tapped the door's keypad with his elbow, and two half circles of solid metal slid out of view, opening the way to the freighter's interior. Two sounds dominated the corridor. The distant reverberation of blaster bolts and the roar of air whipping down the passage. Namir's pod had been the last to leave the Thunderstrike. One of the earlier arrivals must have cracked the freighter's hull worse than intended, opening a leak into space. The corridor itself was tight, packed with heavy-duty piping along the walls and floored with black metal gratings. Not an ideal place for a fight. But then, that's why Namir had come with Chalice late. The first soldiers to board an enemy vessel were always cannon fodder. Namir signaled for the rest of his boarding party to emerge. The two soldiers took up stations in opposite directions down the corridor while Namir announced his arrival over his comm. A series of curt responses assured him that the other squads were active, along with the engineering specialists. One of the freighter's aft command stations had been secured, at least temporarily. That was where Governor Chalice was needed first. Namir gestured for Chalice to follow. She nodded and tapped off her own earpiece. The other boarder stayed behind to protect the pod. The rush of air was warm, almost hot, as if spewed forth by a furnace upwind. Namir was sweating as he crept down the corridor, his armpits moist and his gloves tight over his fingers. He kept his body in front of Chalas, trying to ensure he'd be the first target if they were spotted. He had to fight his training, keep himself from sprinting to cover. He'd played escort for civilians before and barely suppressed his instincts then, but for Chalas, playing bodyguard seemed unnatural.
It's the shield generators.
What? Namir shook his head, baffled.
The shield generators, Chalas said. They're right next to the oxygen units, and they overheat under stress. That's why it's summer in here.
How do you know? Namir rounded a bend, swept the corridor for enemies, and saw none. The blaster fire was getting louder. I served on a ship like this a very long time ago, part of my apprenticeship. Again, there was bitterness instead of arrogance in her tone. Then she added idly,
You know that Stormtrooper armor has environmental controls. Internal cooling options?
On the floor ahead, three dead Stormtroopers were splayed across the grating. Chalas kept talking.
You'd think it would be luxurious, but cooling drains power. Use in non-critical situations is a punishable offense.
So many cadets try it anyway, thinking they won't be caught. Namir nudged a body with the toe of his boot, then stepped over it. He relaxed his shoulders and bit back a smile. The Empire's feigned discipline cracks in the heat.
That's the difference between our forces, Chalas said. Imperial troops all make the same mistakes, and they never make them more than once.
I can only assume Alliance troops are more creative and less agreeable. Namir snorted. Not that creative. It's the same garbage with every batch of fresh meat. I could tell you stories. Realizing what he just said, he winced. The woman was good at making others lower their guards.
I'll take you up on that,
Chalas began. Then there was the sound of another shot, and a red particle bolt flashed across a branch in the corridor ahead.
Another time, she finished, and raised her blaster.
Two quick bursts with the rifle. Namir aimed down the corridor, but he wasn't worried about hitting any particular target. He just meant to discourage stormtroopers from coming around the bend and peppering the hallway with plasma. There wasn't room to dodge. He didn't have the firepower to win. If the enemy pushed forward, the only option was to run. He crept backward with Chalas a short distance behind him. They'd lost almost 10 minutes maneuvering through the freighter and trying to circumvent the worst of the fighting. Repeated calls to the other boarding teams had been of little help. The freighter crew was intermittently jamming transmissions, and the squad Namir could reach had their hands full. That left it up to him and Chalas to take the long route to the command station alone. And Chalas' paranoia hadn't helped.
Half the sections in this ship, she'd snapped, can be open to space or flooded with toxic gas. I'd rather avoid a preventable death.
Namir had agreed, but he still didn't like the delay. A white form appeared at the end of the hallway. Namir's rifle jumped as he fired a pulse. His opponent sprawled on the floor. He crept backward another meter, felt his shoulder brush metal, and lurched away. The wall was hot, scorched by stray bolts.
You all right?
Chalas asked. She stood to one side, pressed to the opposite wall, and working the keypad to a blast door.
Fine,
Namir snapped, gesturing in frustration to the portal.
We're going!
They went, racing down another set of passages before reaching the command station rendezvous. Sergeant Fectron met them, with a trio of engineers, an astromech droid, and two more soldiers. The numbers didn't add up right. Namir realized Fectron had lost a squad member along the way. Fectron dragged the corpse of a young Imperial woman out of a chair and gestured Chalas and the astromech over with a sweeping gesture. Chalas scowled at the squat, boxy droid when it beeped incoherently, but she joined it at the dead woman's terminal. Fectron led Namir to the door and took up a sentry position across from him. Namir felt lighter the moment Chalice was out of reach, as if her mere presence had been oppressive. No, that's not right. Chalice wasn't oppressive. She was callous and manipulative, but Namir never felt personally threatened by her. His responsibility for Chalice, her life, her safety, was what weighed on him. Why did Howl agree to this?
Yours are at the pod,
Fectrin asked. It took Namir a moment to understand.
Keeping an exit route. How about yours?
Kapandar took half a dozen shots before he hit the ground.
Namir knew Kapandar by name and reputation, but the alien hadn't spoken basic. Something about the way his lungs worked, and so they'd never been able to talk. He'd been one of the longest-serving members of Twilight, part of why Namir had approved him for the mission.
One more to drink to when we get back,
Namir said. Fectrin's voice lowered.
Can't she get us what we need?
Namir spared Chalice a glance. She was arguing with the droid at the terminal and gesturing to the screen for the benefit of the engineers.
She wants to get out alive,
Namir said.
She'll do her best, for what that's worth.
Fectrin nodded. He didn't look amused. Namir supposed he couldn't blame him. Namir listened to the other squad's comm transmissions as he waited. From what he could gather, the teams were trying to hold key positions while pushing forward into engineering, opening the way for Fectrin's technical crew. Ajax's men had set up a choke point at one of the main passageways. Charmer was making hit-and-run attacks on guard posts, trying to keep the enemy off balance and obscure Twilight's goal. Carver and Zab's heavy fire teams were at the vanguard, smashing their way through blast doors.
We're ready,
Chalice said.
The engineers can salvage the parts they need from one of the upper drive compartments. We've rerouted the power so they won't be incinerated.
Fectrin relayed instructions through his comm. Namir felt his guts tighten, knowing what came next. He checked the power meter on his rifle to put off saying it aloud. Still at 70%.
That's it for your job.
He was looking at Chalice.
We'll work our way back to the pod and take off. Should be easier while the imps are distracted.
Chalice looked around the room and gestured with her head to a private corner. When Namir joined her, she spoke quietly.
I'm in no hurry to die as gloriously as Kapandar, but I'll be no safer aboard the Thunderstrike if we fail here.
Namir studied the governor's expression, tried to read her, and came up short. He spared a glance for Fectrin, who was organizing the others, and imagined 100 ways the mission could end in disaster.
Stick close to the engineers,
he told Fectrin.
We'll tell you. Keep anyone from coming up behind.
Fectrin nodded carefully, then stepped to the body of a fallen stormtrooper and kicked the man's rifle toward Chalice. It skidded across the floor with a hiss. Without a word, he led the engineers from the room. Whenever Namir taught stormtrooper cadets, cadets who'd abandoned their units, reason, and steady pay to become Twilight Company fresh meat, cadets who, 9 times out of 10, expected to become heroes of democracy and saviors of the weak instead of corpses abandoned on the battlefield, he had to teach them to fight alone. Or close enough, because even soldiers in a 2-person fire team or a 4-person squad certainly felt alone when outnumbered 100 times over. Fighting alone meant guerrilla tactics and dirty tricks, instead of formations and shield domes and air support. It meant setting death traps and shooting people from behind and slitting their throats while they slept. It meant, as Namir recalled being told by one recruit days before she abandoned the company, performing acts that felt more like murder than war. He wasn't surprised that Chalice had no qualms with guerrilla tactics. He was surprised she was good at them. When Fectrin and the engineers had descended to the lower decks, Chalice had identified a gas cooling pipe running down the corridor to the turbo lift. With a bored expression, she'd secured the rebreather tighter over her mouth and shot the pipe 3 times along its length. She missed only once in the attempt. The coolant gas was invisible and odorless, carried along by the wind that twisted through the ship. By the time an Imperial security team came marching down the hall, the officers involved, not stormtroopers, but by the looks of them, washouts, 18-year-old idiots who'd been assigned to a rusting freighter to keep them out of harm's way, were already unsteady on their feet. They couldn't aim straight, couldn't dodge. Namir huddled inside a doorframe and checked his scope, lined up his shots, and burned each of his targets through the chest. Chalice's initial shots came a moment too late, went too wide, but she soon corrected her aim and grip. The kill zone did its work well. Namir and Chalice eliminated a second team, and a third, whoever made it past Ajax and his team's blockade. Over his comm link, Namir listened to Fectrin and the engineers scramble to complete their salvage job. To the other squads, desperately attempting to keep an exfiltration route clear. Twilight Company was hurting, but it was holding its own. Twice the Thunderstrike fired on the freighter, each time attempting to disable critical systems and stem the flow of Imperials into the combat zone. The busier the freighter crew was, just trying to survive, the more Imperials who were repairing life support instead of fighting Twilight, the better. But there was only so much the Thunderstrike could do without killing its own people. And Namir and the others knew it. When Fectrin and the engineers signaled that they'd finished their work, the squads changed tactics. The teams had stretched from their boarding pods into the interior of the freighter like elastic bands, dropping troops at key points and spacing themselves out. Now it was time for the elastic to contract. Each team gradually withdrawing toward its initial position as the engineering team safely passed by. Namir found himself again staying close to Chalice, shielding her body with his own. They allowed the engineering team to overtake them and followed a short distance behind, out of sight but close enough to intercept pursuers. As they approached the outer bulkhead, the engineers split up toward different pods. Fectrin sent the comm signal indicating it was time for a full withdrawal. The squad leaders acknowledged and began to pull back, contracting the lines further. Chalice was smiling as Namir led the way back toward their own boarding pod.
"Now we just hope your engineers were right about what they needed."
Namir grunted.
"Sure. Once we're free and clear of the mid-rim, we get to put this whole botched retreat in the past, lick our wounds before the next massacre. That's the advantage you have with me aboard. The Rebellion won't have to count on winning victories through smug self-righteousness anymore."
Again, Namir couldn't hold back a smile.
"You're one to talk about smug."
Yet it was good to hear someone say the things he couldn't around his colleagues. Chalice laughed, and the sound wasn't affected or measured. It was a note of genuine delight that echoed as they crept together toward their escape. They'd nearly reached the pod when an alert came in from the Thunderstrike. Enemy reinforcements had arrived. An Imperial Gozanti-class cruiser had jumped out of hyperspace and set course for the battle. Howl had given the boarding teams 5 minutes to complete their evacuation. After that, the cruiser would enter firing range, and its turbo lasers and proton torpedoes would begin reducing the Thunderstrike to a molten cloud adrift in space. 5 minutes was more than enough for Namir and Chalice, but Namir knew half the boarding squads wouldn't make it to their pods in time. Not while they were still under fire from the freighter security teams. If they turned their backs on their foes, they'd be shot dead. The burst of comm chatter following Thunderstrike's transmission confirmed Namir's suspicions, as Ajax, Charmer, Fectrin, Zab, and Carver, strained and cursing but never complaining, ordered their teams to do the impossible. Namir stood motionless for only a moment. Then he turned away from the corridor leading to his boarding pod. Chalice moved between him and the rest of the freighter interior.
5 minutes,
he said. The joy had faded from Chalice's face. The creases of age seemed chiseled deeper into her cheeks, and Namir saw she'd been sweating. Her hair was plastered to her forehead. She looked at him gravely and shook her head.
"We're going now."
Someone was shooting a blaster nearby. Namir aimed his rifle over Chalice's shoulder.
You offered your support,
he said.
You had the chance to leave and you'd said you'd...
I said I wanted this mission to succeed. It succeeded. Your friends knew what they signed on for.
4.5 minutes left. There wasn't time to argue.
You know where the boarding pod is,
Namir said, and pushed his way past Chalice and toward the remaining squads. The governor snapped something more, but he didn't hear what. With 4 minutes to spare, Namir located Ajax's squad. In their haste to withdraw, Ajax and his soldiers had backed themselves into a corner. Namir shot wildly into a throng of stormtroopers until his rifle glimmered with warning lights, desperately drawing fire until Ajax's squad could break free. Ajax himself died, shouting obscenities, with a grenade in one fist. With 3 minutes to spare, Namir broke off from the remains of Ajax's squad as Fectron announced over the comm that his team had been split. The engineers were safely away, but the rest of the group was scattered. Fectron's men were being overwhelmed one by one. With 2 minutes to spare, Namir found Fectron's corpse. The alien skin was somehow already cold. Namir realized he'd never touched Fectron before. With 1 minute to spare, Namir heard Charmer stutter into the comm and declare that his team had reached a boarding pod. Namir had never loved Charmer more than in that moment. With no time to spare at all, Namir sealed the door inside Fectron's pod and launched it toward the Thunderstrike. He did so alone.
Eight dead. It's not a bad number until you look at who we lost.
Lieutenant Sargon spoke slowly, as if he were testing each word for flaws before pronouncing it. He turned a datapad over in his hands without looking, addressing the gap between Namir and Howl in the captain's cramped office. Thunderstrike and Apylina's Promise had jumped to hyperspace under fire, and both ships wore scars from the battle. The Promise had lost its shield generator blocking volleys aimed at the Thunderstrike, while the Thunderstrike itself had been forced to seal off two decks due to hull breaches. Nonetheless, the engineering team swore that the raid had been worthwhile. Thunderstrike's course could not be traced again. Chalice had arrived back aboard safely with the men who'd guarded her pod. If Hal knew Namir had arrived separately, he had not mentioned it.
What about the recruits?
Hal was looking at Namir. Coyote toughened them up. The ones who went anyway. The others are mostly ready. They'll shore up manpower, but we can't just slot in a new Ajax.
If they're willing to fight and willing to learn, it's enough for now,
Hal said.
They'll have time to train at the flotilla.
Namir glanced towards Sargon. The man's expression hadn't changed, but then it rarely did. Sargon was built from granite.
We putting in for repairs?
Namir asked.
Yes and no,
Hal said. Sargon was the one to explain.
The Thunderstrike and the Promise will rendezvous with three other battle groups in deep space. We've allocated a month to get both ships back in shape and let the men heal up. Alliance High Command should have new orders for the whole flotilla by then.
Namir winced. On the one hand, a month of rest and gentle training would be good for the company. Soldiers assigned new squads would need time to adjust. He had lists of troops with minor injuries, burns, lacerations, sprains, that had gone ignored since before Haedoral. But a month in deep space was bound to be mind-numbing. By the end, he wouldn't be surprised if even the droids would be shooting holes in the walls to stave off boredom.
All right, Namir said. That sounds like a yes. What's the no?
Howl smiled, a warm, sad smile that made Namir want to slap him.
I told you that Governor Chalice has been working on a schematic.
Namir cut him off. Of the workings of the Empire. Every trade route, every factory, every neuron in his brain, I've heard her speech. Howl bowed his head and turned to his holoprojector. He tapped a button. The overhead lights dimmed and a shimmering blue image filled the room. An intricate tangle that looked to Namir less like a machine or a monster, and more like a plant floating within a fine mist. Gleaming droplets slid down a thousand stalks while spherical buds swelled and shrank. At a gesture from a Howl's head, the whole image rotated, and 100 labels flashed into place. Here and there, Namir spotted the name of a star system he recognized. Coruscant, Corellia, Mandalore. But they brought him no understanding.
"She really is something of an artist," Howl said. "I can't quite parse it all myself, but I've already confirmed portions with High Command. 2 weeks ago, our spies uncovered a Tabana mining operation in the Pantrosian Eye. It's how the Empire was able to increase its blaster production rate over the past year. Chalice couldn't have known we knew about it, but it's there, in her masterpiece."
"So it's useful," Namir said. "What does it mean for us?"
"We," Howl said, "have received an invitation to High Command's secret base, per direct order of Princess Leia. While the Thunderstrike is being repaired, Chalice and I, along with an escort, will be leaving Twilight Company to discuss the next phase of the war."
Namir nodded carefully. His muscles felt suddenly fatigued, as if he'd been standing for hours. Howl's departure would cause some complaints among the rank and file, but losing Chalice, it was long past time, and it could only bode well. Howl leaned forward across his desk, eyes wide and gleaming as he smiled.
"Congratulations," he said. "You're part of the escort."
"Of course I am," Namir thought, and he fought back a bitter laugh. Chalice was bad luck after all, and he'd been carrying her like a charm.